morning, 7:39, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Joining us in studio, we have Chip Simmons, the sheriff for Escambia County. Sheriff, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to have you. I did want to get a couple of things that are kind of like clean up, and I just want to make sure we don't forget to get to them. You and I talked previously about the disagreement that you and the state attorney's office had over the appropriateness, and with the courts, over the appropriateness of handling the interrogation of the suspect in the Aldi Clarity murder. Those charges have now been dropped, and so the case is done, I guess. And, you know, we've kind of hashed this out a little bit before, but any final thoughts on this? You know, do you plan to do anything differently going forward as a result of what happened here?
I mean, my thoughts have not changed. I disagree with the district courts. I mean, you know, you can look at a lot of examples of people that disagree with court findings. In this case, I just want to remind everyone that we had the state attorney's office, who are attorneys, who know the laws. Our investigators are highly trained. They're experienced investigators. They know the law. And it's always been known that if you read someone their rights and they decide not to talk to you, they can re-engage, and you can have that conversation. What you do is you re-administer them the rights, mm-hmm. and in our case, that's exactly what took place. He requested a re-engagement of a conversation, and when we re-engaged, we reapplied this Miranda warning, mm-hmm. and there was even a suppression hearing in Judge Simon's court, and Judge Simon, during that suppression hearing, found that interrogation was legitimate and legal. But again, that's the system that we live in. We have to respect that, and we'll do so. We have had many conversations for a year now, I guess.
Yeah.
Over you know, these conversations and what we can do better. I mean, we're not fools. We're going to look at it and say, okay, there's something that we could do a little differently.
Even if we believe we're right, it doesn't matter if the courts say we're wrong.
Right. Because we don't want this to happen again.
Right.
You know, I do want to remind everyone, there was another individual that is serving
convicted,
life in
right?
prison.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, this is another that we felt like was guilty as well. And they were found guilty in prison. And then obviously the District Court of Appeals decided differently.
I said it a little bit. I may have said it wrong. I know you disagree with the court. Is there friction or daylight between you and the state attorney's office over this thing?
No, no, no.
Okay.
No.
All right. I think I said that wrong then. Thank you for clarifying. The other thing is, like, what do you do in a case like this? You've got somebody that you are convinced and was convicted, although that was later overturned. You're convinced as a murderer running around on the streets. You just pretend like you don't know that? What do you do?
Well, there are times when we are convinced that there's a person did a certain crime, whether it's not always murder, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's someone, we knew this is the person that burglarized this house. This is the person we think that robbed this bank. But we don't have probable cause to make an arrest. That's the system we live in. That's why we are the greatest country this world's ever known, because you have to be able to prove someone is guilty of a crime in the court of law.
Right.
And so we understand our role in that this system, and we want to make sure that we do things as professional as we possibly can. And sometimes, you know, these are the only times things get overturned, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, laws change and Supreme Courts and courts all over the place strike down rulings. We had one, that struck down the open carry statute in the state of Florida. So all those individuals that were arrested for open carry throughout the years, all those have been dismissed. So this happens regularly. But again, that's part of the system, and we have to respect that and live within it.
I guess as a citizen, you know, it would comfort me to know that, you know, you guys pay extra attention to people that you think are murderers and are walking around the streets. I mean, I don't know what the rule is about, you know, surveilling them. I know you always have to have probable cause. You have to have evidence before you act in any case. But I don't want you to pretend like you don't know what you know. I mean, I want you to keep me safe. And part of that means paying extra attention to the bad guys, the real bad guys.
Well, I mean, all I can tell you is that if we think someone is involved in criminal activity, we will investigate them.
Yeah,
that's all I can really say
okay.
about all right,
that. Fair. Yeah, and I mean, I certainly don't want to get you into any kind of trouble, you know, for future cases as well. So we had a case with a property theft in Cantonment, a whole bunch of weird stuff, right? Like I don't even remember all the things, a boat, many tens
everything
of thousands of
think
dollars.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mostly from one warehouse or something, right?
Yeah, we got a kind of a tip that, hey, there's bad things, some thefts going on and some property, stolen property. I don't recall. I think Garmin Road is an unrelated stolen tractor. So we get there. And this is a long, complicated investigation. But to your point, we discovered utility trailer, outboard engine. I have to read it all because a lot of stuff. A Ford Marine engine, all confirmed stolen in a recent commercial burglary. And then he was linked to, a 17-foot Key West boat. Just a number of things. Basically, they stole like $35,000 worth of equipment. We ended up arresting, let me get his name here. His last name is Odom, 47-year-old male.
Christopher Odom.
Christopher Odom was charged with all this stuff. No one likes a thief, right? And in this case, you're stealing everything you can get your hands on.
Yeah, this is next level shoplifting, right? Like, I mean, he just sees something, he takes it.
He has a specialty, right? He's boats and trailers and that sort of thing.
Was he trying to sell them?
You know, I don't know. Like, I don't have the information. Kleptomaniac, on that, but
can't stop about acquiring tractors.
Ago, we had about a guy stealing about $100,000 worth of equipment.
Yeah.
A lot of it was Dave.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Different things. So our investigators are doing a really good job of tracking down these thieves and putting them in jail. Hopefully they stay in jail. You know, they're not out quickly on bond, or they get some sort of a light or moderate sentence, and they can keep terrorizing our
right
law-abiding citizens.
No, you're exactly right, though. Nobody loves a thief, particularly. I guess we had a stabbing cutting overnight on Citrus near Massachusetts. Is that what happened? You had the canine got involved. What happened here?
Yeah, well, we get a call. It happened on the 7th. We get a call that in the 400 block of Citrus Street that there was a cutting. Someone had been stabbed and cut in the hand. When we get there, we develop a Brandon Bacon. That's his real name. Brandon Bacon is the suspect in this case. Our canine gets there, and he tracks with his handler, obviously, all the way to an address. I think it's 421 Citrus. 421 Citrus, where the suspect, Brandon Baker, also happens to live, right? So we knock on the door. He doesn't come to the door. We secure an arrest warrant and a search warrant. Mm-hmm. When he doesn't open the door, we open it for them. and then we track the blood. So there's a knife there. Then we see him behind a bed, but he won't come out. And so the canine handler gives a warning. The canine himself probably gave a warning. And then he decided to come out. So our canine took care of business and apprehended the suspect. Got arrested, charged with aggravated battery.
Okay. Well, good work by all. Wow. You went to Tallahassee, right, to meet with the other sheriffs and the legislative delegation. Is that right?
Yeah. So last, you know, I'm not big on going to Tallahassee. That's a slow, you know, sausage making operation over there. But so people understand, I was there last Tuesday. We have what we call Sheriff's Day at the Capitol. It's our opportunity to get together and talk about some of our legislative priorities, mm-hmm. some things that we see that maybe we're not be comfortable with, and we say, hey, representative or senator, this is kind of where we, as a collectively and individually, where we think we can make our community safer. And so that's what we did.
So this is by region? So this would be like Michelle and
the entire state. The entire state. We had about 30. In fact, it was the largest collection of sheriffs for a legislative day that we've had. So
okay.
I think 35 sheriffs met. This is the second meeting. First meeting is legislative day, where we all meet and talk about what our priorities are.
Okay.
And then this was the meeting that we can walk the halls of the Capitol. And we have an opportunity to meet with, we met with the President of the Senate, Mr. Albritton.
Okay.
And just say, hey, these things are important to us. And I think what's kind of revealing is that we spoke to, I recall his name, there's a tons of representatives.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But he spoke to us and he says, you know, I when I got here, you guys are thanking me for what we've done, the bills we've passed. What you should be thanking me for is the bills that we've stopped.
Mm.
Because there's some ridiculous, mm-hmm. silly, crazy laws that or bills that various representatives in various locations and various senators in various locations throughout the state of Florida are trying to get passed.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can stop the majority of this nonsense is he's right, is probably something we should be thanking them for. But rest assured, I'm no lobbyist, and I don't intend to be a lobbyist. I'm more forthright with, this is ridiculous, you can't do this. This is the implications that it's going to have. And I do appreciate their willingness to listen to the sheriffs. We have a rather strong coalition,
mm-hmm.
And we're able to, you know, to let them know what is important to our community.
Anything particular coming up in session that's caught your attention, either good or bad?
A lot of the conversations about property tax reduction and relief, and
funding
what that
impact,
might do
right?
To sheriff's office, because the sheriff's office is throughout the state,
right?
And municipality, municipal police departments are funded through general funds. And so it's one of those things where let's try to figure out which one of these bills might make it to the surface, and then what the governor may or may not sign. So just some conversations, but the governor might have some priorities as well. So a lot of it, we're talking about that, and we decided again collectively that there's no reason to panic now. If there's a time to panic, we'll panic then. But right now, let's take a look and see, because thousands of bills get presented in only
right.
one or two.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Actually,
yeah.
come through. So yeah, we'll take a look at that, and that's what a lot of conversations are. Whether there's a carve out for law enforcement, or public safety, and if that's a 1-year carve out, 2-year carve out. Because if you're, you know, there's already a law that you cannot defund law enforcement, right? But defund means that we would have the same budget next year as we have this year, and that's
you can slow defund.
You have to reduce staffing, because most the overwhelming majority of our funding is for personnel.
Santa Rosa County is clearly moving towards having school zone speed cameras, right? Milton is doing a study. Gulf Breeze has done the study. They're implementing or going to implement. And then Santa Rosa County is also, which is being led largely by the sheriff and the school board. I've been surprised I haven't heard this conversation in Escambia County. Have you guys taken a position on school zone speed cameras? Have you talked with either the school board or the, you know, Board of County Commissioners about this issue? Do you think it's a problem in Escambia County?
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about this. I have two complaints that I get on regarding school zones. One is that, people are speeding through them, and the other is that people can't move because the cars are at gridlock.
Oh, my God, yes. I live right by a high school, so yes.
I'm assuming it's somewhere in between, that there are speeders, obviously. And then there are congestion problems. So,
right.
again, if it's congestion, you're not speeding. So that's something
right.
we got to
congestion solves the speeding problem.
I will tell you that I've had a couple of conversations throughout the last year or so with Keith Leonard, the superintendent. Very open about what we can and can't do, what we should and shouldn't do with regards to speeding in school zones, but also with regards to school bus cameras on school bus stop, mm-hmm. the stop
arms.
Arms on a school bus. And we're not in a position yet, or at least I'm not in a position yet where I would recommend to them, hey, let's do this, let's do that. Those school zones, that's why what you're talking about, and I haven't read up on what they're doing over in Santa Rosa County, but it takes a lot of studies. It mm-hmm. takes a lot of effort, takes some ordinance changes, takes some support from the county, the Board of County Commissioners
right.
and the school district and obviously the sheriff's office to work within that. So it's a lot. But we're not looking at it at this point. I'm not looking at it at this very moment.
Okay. One of the other stories that comes out of Gulf Breeze is that they're looking to acquire a canine that's trained to identify guns, which is kind of a novelty. I'd not heard of that one before.
Identify guns?
That's
a 9mm, that's a .38?
Ha! No? That's a Walther. You know, that bark indicates it's clearly
the presence of a firearm.
Austrian, that's a Glock.
Okay.
You're well done.
I got you.
And I thought that was kind of interesting because that's kind of a novelty at this point within the law enforcement community. That's not a very common one. You obviously drugs, obviously tracking dogs, obviously, you know, bomb detection for the airport. But to identify that somebody's coming into the school with a gun as opposed to having a metal detector or something like that. Is that an application or a canine style that you guys have looked at all for the schools? Has that come to your attention at all?
No, I it's not. That's not the conversations that we've had
okay.
with the school district on what type of a dogs that we get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we again, as you mentioned, we've had bomb dogs, we've had electronics
right.
dogs, and we certainly have drug dogs and apprehension.
And I think in this case, it's meant to be simultaneously to identify guns, but also it's more like a lab style. It's meant to be more of a companion dog, like that the kids could actually pet and play with and touch, that when the SRO is on campus, it's not a shepherd, you know, it's not a Malinois. It's something that's much more approachable, I think. It's kind
I think
of
they
dual purpose.
Some of those at the airport. I'm not sure if that was a bomb dog or if it was a gun. And, you know, maybe they can train them both. If you can detect for bombs, maybe you can also detect for
it seems like it'd be similar.
Of some sort, yeah. Again, I'm not an expert in canines. I know they smell very well. And so I'm thinking that you can teach them to identify a firearm.
He said, well, he doesn't mean they smell good. They're not sweet smelling. They're effective at their job. John's snickering over here at your good use of grammar.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez, John. Let the man talk. You've got movie night coming up in Cantonment.
We got movie night coming up in Cantonment, yeah. On Friday, this Friday, we're going to be showing The Grinch up there. And it's right after the Century Christmas Parade. And as I understand it, the parade will end right there at the Anthony Pleasant Park. And we'll start showing a movie thereafter. We got a hamburgers and hot dogs and some chips and some drinks, and we'll have canines.
And you don't do a lot of stuff. Like, this is kind of unusual for Cantonment, for Century. So nice, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, we like to get there as much as we can, but Escambia County is a big county. You know, we have 800 square miles, I believe it is, and to drive from here to Cantonment takes almost an hour.
Yeah.
So we try to get up there. We certainly have a precinct up there in Cantonment. We have deputies that patrol up there. And so it's a good opportunity for us to get up there and re-engage with the folks up there at Century.
Very good. Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for the time this morning. And please forgive my producer for, you know, his...
I forgive both of y'all.
That's 100%.
For stuff you've done and stuff you're about to do.
Oh, all right. My priest and my sheriff. Chip Simmons, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Y'all take care.